Welcome to the Church Podcast, talking all things ministry to help you do church better. I'm your co-host, John Ronaldo, and I am joined here with Mr. Chris Wesley, all the way across the country. Chris, how are you today?
I'm doing well, John. I am feeling great, which is hard to believe because, as I mentioned before we hit record, we do not have power in my house. There was a crazy rainstorm that blew through, and I'm starting to get the sense that I need to buy a generator. But it's a little bit hard because we have a huge fridge and freezer here at the school that I can just put my food in and not lose it. But it was one of those situations where it was a freak storm, kind of came out of nowhere, wouldn't have been a big deal except for the fact that I had just ordered groceries to be delivered for the first time. I was trying the grocery delivery thing for the first time, and I couldn't cancel the order. And so they delivered groceries to a house with no power. Oh, and so I was just like, oh, so fortunately, most of it was dry goods and everything. But I don't even know why I'm sharing this. After saying like life is good. Life is really good. It's always good to chat with you. One thing I kind of have to bring up, now that you're in the Vegas area and I'm in the Baltimore area, it's a shame that I'm not a Caps fan and you're not a Golden Knights fan, unless you become a Golden Knights fan, because we could have had some good banter during the Stanley Cup finals. But
For those of you who aren't hockey fans, man, this Stanley Cup was fun to watch, especially because the Golden Knights are a brand new expansion team.
Right.
With Las Vegas, and people are like, wait, ice in Las Vegas? Like,
right.
What? Yeah. I think a really exciting story with the Golden Knights, their first season. And they made it to the Stanley Cup, which is certainly better than I could say for my San Jose Sharks.
Oh, yeah. And my Rangers, too. I don't think either of our teams made the playoffs, but...
The Sharks make the playoffs, but we got beat by the Knights in the playoffs, so...
Oh, that's right. Oof.
But for Mother's Day, I finally broke down and bought my wife a San Jose Sharks jersey.
Because that's what every wife wants, right? Is a hockey.
She game. Actually did. It was awesome. This is what she did. But I'm like, if we're moving to Vegas, we need the world to know that we're still San Jose Sharks fans. I will say this, though. My wife and I have had conversations like, look, we're going to root for the Knights when they're not playing the Sharks. And we're probably going to go to games, especially when they're playing the Sharks. So I'm excited to root for the Knights. So I'm not going to change loyalties, but I have no problem rooting for more than one team.
I can understand that. I can do that with some of the Baltimore teams here. I can't with all of them. But no, I appreciate it. And you got to go where passion is, right? Passion attracts passion. And if there's anything that we've learned about our faith is that, while knowledge is important, passion is what fuels that knowledge. Passion is what, leads us forward and helps us spread this faith. And, there's no better place to have passion than when it comes to receiving the sacraments, especially the sacrament of confirmation. So, that's what we're talking about today is confirmation. I got to just hit time out and people might hate me for saying this. Is it bad that I'm impressed with the way that I can transition something out of nowhere? I mean, like, is that... Like, if there was an Olympic sport, would I be an Olympian, John?
You might be. I have to say, one of the things I get most excited about is figuring out. I let Chris do the transitions. I don't even bother anymore. It's like, how is he going to transition from the banter to the topic? Because you usually do it really, really well. I'm sitting there going, dude, you nailed it today. So,
but sometimes I think it's a little outlandish. Like, I know you gave me the thumbs up, like, good job. But I'm like thinking, like, I pulled this one out left field. But, we're talking about confirmation. Maybe we should talk about confession because of the lying that I do. We're going to talk about confirmation as a part of our series where it's from the book Forming Intentional Disciples, where Sherry Waddell says that we are too busy sacramentalizing people instead of evangelizing them. And I know I paraphrased that quote, but that's what we've been talking about, especially in the context of baptism, Holy Communion, marriage. And so today we're going to talk about confirmation. And we've talked about it before. We've had conversations about that, about the sacrament before, so nothing new. But what I think we should do is take that look of, okay, where do we make it just about the sacrament and not necessarily an opportunity to pass the faith along or to encourage that next generation, or not just even the next generation, but even through RCIA to go and make disciples of all nations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is probably the one episode of these, you know, four or five episodes, I forget how many of this series, that I'm certainly most passionate about, partly because I've had so much experience with this, but mm-hmm. partly because it was my own confirmation experience that really defined who I am today mm-hmm. and the ministry I'm doing today. And that's a story for another time, but you know, short story here, basically saying like, I'm doing this today because of my confirmation experience. My confirmation experience was my first conversion experience. Now, I've had others along the way that have continued to find my ministry and move before, but I'm so passionate about this subject because there's so much potential with the sacrament of confirmation, with all the sacraments, but certainly with the sacrament of confirmation. And I have spent a ton of time and energy thinking about this and doing this. I grew up doing youth and young adult ministry. It's still something I'm passionate about, and confirmation is a piece of that, because in my experience, we did confirmation with high school students. And I just think, oh, this is such an important sacrament for me. And we can't blow it.
No, but I have to agree with you on that. I mean, for me, it's something I'm passionate about. It's funny. I recall my confirmation. It did have an impact on me, I don't think in the same way that it did for you, in the way that you shared with me before, but, you know, it's funny, like when a lot of youth ministers I talk to are, interested in a youth ministry job, they're not excited about the idea of taking over confirmation. For me, I love it. I mean, I love the process that goes behind the preparation. I love, what the sacrament is all about. You know, it's something that was birthed from the day of Pentecost, you know, when the church literally exploded and became, this force to be reckoned with. And so for me, I always see confirmation for, especially our young people, as an opportunity to relive that. What breaks my heart is how so many of us mail it in. Right. And I think, you know, if we're going to talk about how it's sacramentalized and not evangelized, is how we lose sight of what it is. We see it as this last ditch effort, right? And we try to fit, you know, depending on when you're confirming, whether it's eighth grade, ninth grade, or 10th grade, but 10 years, 12 years of faith formation into a year. You know, and expecting kids who are walking into the process, who are walking into the preparation with no clue who Jesus is, with no clue, meaning no clue on that relationship with Jesus is, and then expecting them to walk out like little theologians, little St. Augustines and St. Francis and going out there to change the world. And I think if we have that attitude, we're only going to meet disappointment and failure and do a disservice to not just the church, but to these young men and women who are going through the process.
Yeah. Well, so let's be real here. I mean, a lot of us treat it as like the last final carrot. This right. is the last carrot that we have to dangle in front of these kids to keep them in church. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, really? Like, if that's your lens on how you look at confirmation, man, I mean, we've got to rewrite that history there, because if you're worried about keeping kids in the pews, you know, and confirmation, and you're using the sacrament of confirmation, you know, as that last carrot to keep them there, we got to rethink that, because that is mm-hmm. not effective. And the reason sometimes confirmation is not impactful is because we're coming at it like that.
Right.
You know, with this, like, here's the carrot, here's the last thing, this is our last chance, versus what you're talking about is really like, this is a formation opportunity. This is evangelizing opportunity. This is, as all the sacraments are, then this is not any different than communion or baptism. As we know our history, a lot of us know that, you know, the three sacraments of initiation, are really one, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I think it's important to really obviously think that through, you know, but like, let's stop treating confirmation as this last ditch effort. To kind of give faith to these young people, because when we come at it with that, that lens, I think our young people see right through it. And I think that lens is not effective in the way that we do a confirmation. And I know, Chris, you're so passionate about this particular subject that you've gone ahead and written a book on this topic called Rebuilding Confirmation. And we're going to certainly spend some time talking about that, but I'm interested, you know, real quickly, if you could, what was the impetus of that particular book? Why were you so inspired to write a book on confirmation?
Because I was tired of the same old conversations around it. You know, like, what curriculum are you using? How many hours are you requiring kids to serve? You know, like, what robes are you using at the confirmation mass? You know, it's just kind of like, give me a break. Like, are we, I mean, we might have to bleep out some things in this podcast, because that's how fired up.
Swear words.
Right.
PG podcast.
Right, exactly. But, you know, this is where I get the most passionate about, because I think we have just nonsensical conversations around things that really in the end don't matter. You know, what I'd like to have a conversation is what are the values that you instill in the students as they go through the process, or what kind of training to provide for the sponsors who are supposed to be these like spiritual Yodas, these spiritual gurus that assist these young men and women way past the confirmation mass. You know, how are we judging and evaluating the quality of our youth programs and our children's programs so that when kids are ready for confirmation and request that we can be confident that we're building on a solid foundation? Because I think, you know, one of the main reasons confirmation preparation, not the sacrament, but the preparation fails is because it's built off of a really rocky foundation right there. So, you know, I wrote the book because I just wanted to have different conversations about it. And, you know, it's funny because when I wrote it, I didn't mean to, you know, share necessarily a model of confirmation, even though I had shared the experience I had at Nativity. But there are a lot of people who took some of the principles from that and really wanted to, from that and really started to incorporate that into their programs. And so I feel kind of honored in that. But it was really just to start the conversation and have something different, kind of like what we're doing with this podcast. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't picked up a copy of Rebuilding Confirmation, definitely check it out. You can get it on Amazon or AveMariaPress.com. Check it out there. We'll have a link in our show notes on thechurchpodcast.org.
Yeah, good. So let's get into this then, because, you know, this is obviously important. Again, this is the last episode in our series on evangelizing versus sacramentalizing. And so let's just go in. Chris, what are some of the things that you want to really instill as part of our programs, as part of our confirmation prep that we need to change, we need to look at? What are some areas? Where do you think we should start here?
Man, that's a loaded question. So what I would propose, and this is really bold, and I actually got this opportunity to do that here at St. Joseph's, right, is if a church could take a sabbatical from confirmation for a year, if 2 years even, but I would say a year, that would be great. Now, you can cover under, like, what we were able to do was we were moving confirmation from 8th grade to 9th grade. So it's not like now we're coming back and have double the amount of students that we would have had before. So if you've ever debated about moving it later, this is definitely a time to do it. But I would, even if you're going to keep it in 9th grade or 8th grade or 6th grade or wherever you do it, I would say take a year off to evaluate the health of your ministry. And when I say ministry, I mean the ministry of, like, for your teenagers, the ministry that you have for your children as well. So I would definitely start there. So that would be the first step, is doing that. Now, when you hear that, John, of taking a whole year off, what are your thoughts?
I love it, quite honestly, because what happens in ministry is we kind of get on this cycle, we get on this rat wheel, and right, and we kind of keep running, right? And we have a period of time where, okay, now we're preparing for this, now we're preparing for this, now we're preparing this, and then we go back, well, okay, now for confirmation. My point being, basically, we have no time to think, let alone breathe. And so sometimes taking a time out from something allows us the space, the reflective space, to say and to really evaluate and say, what should we be doing? What's going to be more effective? What's not? And I think that's a principle that could probably be used in other areas as well in our ministry, not just confirmation. So I really like it. However, I can totally see the pushback. Like, well, we're not going to provide a sacrament for a year. It's like, oh, that's a big part of what we do. Or like, oh no, yeah. So I could see the pushback on that. But I think I think you have to do it. I think you're absolutely right on. Take a time out, you know, any part of your ministry so that you can really reflect and evaluate in a way that you just can't do when you're on that hamster wheel. Keep going and going and going.
Well, and that's something we see all the time in the business world. For example, Starbucks with their recent event, you know, they closed down their shops for a day to do a training on diversity and, you know, multicultural, I can't remember the term they used, but they did a training to deal with a certain situation where they had to say, all right, time out. Let's take a step back. So, you know, anytime you see something not going right in your ministry, it's okay to take a time out. And if you can't do it for a year, do it for 6 months. Just delay the process. You know, any chance that you can to take a step back and say, okay, what are we doing? Because I think one of the biggest challenges we face with doing that is the fact that confirmation ends and then 2 weeks later, preparation begins all over again. And so it becomes a little bit of an issue. So I think for us, we have to be able to kind of pump the brakes and just say, all right, let's look at the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. So let's say that's the first step. I don't think like everyone can start there. So I'll give like another step. I think another step is looking at the application process, the enrollment process. I think we're too quick to just say, hey, you're ninth grade. Hey, you've been baptized. Hey, you belong to this church. Great, you're in. I'm not saying that we have to create another like bar for people to reach in order to go in. But one of my favorite things that I've implemented into the confirmation prep, and I think it's been one of the most fruitful aspects to confirmation, is asking parents and teenagers to write a 500-word essay. And in the book, Rebuilding Confirmation, I have a different question than what I'm using now. The question that I'm having people use now is actually something I took from a marketing book called Ask by Ryan Levesque. And in that book, what he has is this question, which is structured like this. He says, ask your customers, what is the single biggest challenge, obstacle, or struggle you're facing when it comes to X, right? So with our candidates, our confirmande, what we ask them is, what's the single biggest struggle you have when it comes to having a personal relationship with Jesus Christ? And then we ask the parents to write an essay answering the question, what is the single biggest challenge you have when it comes to sharing your faith with your teenagers? And what we've received in essays has been mind-blowing. We, one, learn our parents and kids on the same page. Two, we learn how good are both parents and teens at articulating their faith. You know, with a lot of the teens, we get this academic answer saying like, you know, confirmation is blah, 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 blah. A personal relationship with Jesus Christ is supposed to be like this. And they don't really own the language in their statement, even though they might be talking about themselves, even though they're expressing their feelings, they don't own it you would hope that they would. And then we also learn, you know, what are myths that they've bought into, you know, especially parents, like I share my faith with my kids because I want them to be good people, or I want them to go to church all the time. And those are important aspects of sharing your faith, but they're not the only reason you share your faith. And so it gives us, meaning myself and my volunteers, and even our church, an idea of who we're starting with, where we can actually meet these people because of the obstacles that stand in their way. Mm-hmm. So asking that simple question has, and having that application process allows us to slow it down and say, okay, who are we accepting into the program? Who are we accepting into the preparation there?
So I like the question. I want to push back, though, interestingly enough, on the idea of this essay, do you get academic answers from young people because when they think of essays and applications, they think of school?
you know, that's worth evaluating. I don't know. I think it's because I would say there's truth to that, where there's so much in drenched in school that's the only way they know how to write. Mm-hmm. But I'm willing to bet it's just because we haven't raised a generation or a couple generations on how to personalize and own their faith, how to articulate on that. Because there's a couple kids we get that. And another alternative that we started doing is if kids don't want to write the 500-word essay, they can record a 2 to 3 minute video. Right.
Yes, I love that.
And so there's a couple of those videos and they're so fun to watch because you can tell these kids rehearsed a couple times before they did it, you know? And so it's going to be fun going through this process with a bunch of these students to say like, yeah, let's work on articulating your faith. Let's re-enliven that passion. And so even coming up to this preparation, and this goes back to evangelizing and not sacramentalizing, is the fact that we want these teens to understand what it means to share their faith and what it means to get passionate about their faith before we worry about the factoids that are important to our faith, but really don't mean anything if there's not passion behind that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'd love to be at a point in our confirmation process where we don't have to worry about that's being fulfilled in our youth ministry, in our children's ministry. But right now, that's where we're focusing our attention in the confirmation program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. And I think one of the challenges that we have in confirmation in general is how academic-like the program is, in the sense of like, you've got a 2-year thing, you've got all these requirements that you need to fulfill, you need to do these service hours, you can only miss 3 sessions in 2 years or whatever it is, and, you know, and then we wonder why they're treating this like a graduation when they get confirmed. Well, because we've set it up like that, you know,
right.
Honestly, you know, and here's the real challenge, right? That we have diocesan requirements, you know, that every single Catholic church in the world has a diocese that they're a part of. And I know for the United States, there are a lot of dioceses that have these very intricate multi-page, you know, plans or guidelines of what confirmation should be. Now, it's not all bad. I'm not saying it's all bad, you know, but one of the things that I find is that we kind of take it to law, right? We say, we got to follow this exactly to a T or we're going to get in trouble. And I would argue that I would say some of the diocesan guidelines that I've seen are really not effective, you know, and I don't want to go and throw out the entire thing. And I want to be careful of that, you know, but I think we need to really strongly analyze our diocesan guidelines. And if you're a listener and part of a diocese office and you have some info to say on that, I would say for you, take a look at that, you know, take a look at the guidelines and then take a look at the lived experience of the parishes that you get a chance to work with and say, where are the guidelines really meeting the needs of the parishes? And where is it missing? Right. Well, so if you're in a diocesan role, I encourage that.
Yeah. I don't know if I 100% agree with that, because I agree that some dioceses, they'll make it really complicated. Other dioceses, I think they give you free range. I mean, Archdiocese of Baltimore, I think, gives us plenty of free range. Where I would not necessarily put the blame, but I think kind of adds to the problem, are a lot of the curriculum companies that come out here, you know, You know, I'm interested to learn more about Life Teens Confirmation Program because, you know, it's just whenever these companies come out or ministries come out with programs, it's just really interesting, like Decision Point, Chosen, you know, there are 9-12 week sessions and everything like that. Do we really need, you know, that many videos do we really need these textbooks for confirmation? Is confirmation prep really a textbook sacramental prep? I mean, you know, we were talking about this with Holy Communion a little bit, you know, even with baptism and marriage, do we need to give people workbooks to work their way through that? And does it have to be 12 classes, you know, I think, you know, yes, the diocese needs to address better guidelines, and there can always be room for improvement on that. But sometimes, you know, I think these companies that outsource these confirmation curriculum add to the madness because they set this expectation of like, oh my gosh, in order for my kids to get confirmed, I have to go through 2 years worth of curriculum, which we've talked about this before. Do you really need 2 years to prepare for confirmation? Like, I mean, is that just killing it? Is that just making people just so angry towards this sacrament that when they're done with it, they're like, I'm done with the church, you know? Yeah. So, you know, nothing against the quality of some of these materials and the intentions behind it. But, you know, I think before we throw out another confirmation program, we really have to think about, are we adding to the mess or are we, you know, leading people away from it?
Well, and I think, you know, to be fair, the publishers write curriculum based on, you know, the bishop's standards, you know, and so they're really trying to follow those standards so they can get the approvals that they need to be able to publish those things in the first place. But I think you're absolutely right. And do you need 2 years? See, here's the thing. The reason I think a lot of dioceses would say that there should be a 2-year requirement, which some do, you know, is because they know that young people aren't involved in any other way. Right. And so, you know, the 2-year requirement becomes a non-issue if you have effective children's middle school and high school ministry, right? Right. Quite honestly, you know, so if we're doing things effectively, then they're already involved in ministry. They're already being fed in some way, shape or form. And so when the time comes, when the decision time comes that a young person wants to get confirmed, you know, and they want to complete these sacraments that they're already embedded in the church community. They're already embedded in the learning of the ministry and it's not anything new. But the problem is that I think one of the problems is we don't have often effective youth ministry or effective middle school ministry or effective children's ministry that keeps them engaged and be part of the community. And so therefore we put this 2-year requirement on because we haven't seen them since they were 7.
Right.
And they got their first community. So now we got it. Okay. Let's put them in a 2-year program. So now you're in this 2-year program that like kids who may not want to be there. And then those that were already engaged in the parish are going like, I have to do a 2-year program too. So you're building discontent from both ends, those that are engaged and those that are not engaged. There's no easy solution, but I think one of the biggest concerns I have when it comes to the world of youth ministry is that we have put so much energy into confirmation as staff members, right? You know, that we have no time to develop an effective, comprehensive youth ministry. Mm-hmm. And our confirmation program becomes the default youth ministry program. That, folks, we can't do that. It just is not effective. And I understand that sometimes that's all we can do. And, you know, but this, I think we got to think differently.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's funny, we've been talking for a while and we barely scratched the surface on this.
Oh my gosh.
And we're kind of like,
we're like already at 30 minutes.
Yeah. We might have to make this like a 2-part series. I mean, we've talked about confirmation before, but you know, but I think the bottom line is that what, if there's something to take away from this episode, that it's really just learning how to press pause on this whole process. And I think you kind of nailed it just in your last statement where, you know, we have to change our emphasis onto the youth ministry and children's ministry aspect of formation and not so much confirmation. And that sounds weird. It sounds wrong because our sacraments are so important to our Catholic identity and our Catholic faith. But if we want to make sacramental prep healthy, especially in confirmation, we have to build a healthy foundation. And that comes by looking at our youth ministry programs, our children's ministry programs, and asking how are our kids not only growing in discipleship, but how are they getting involved? How are they learning how to articulate their faith? How are they, you know, interacting in the liturgy? You know, because if we can answer those questions, then confirmation, it's a game changer. It becomes something totally different. Totally different. So, I would say that is probably the first place to start is to look at where you can press pause and then look at, you know, how you're enrolling kids. And then lastly, just again, say, okay, where are we putting that emphasis when it comes to the rest of our formation for the next generation right there? Would you add anything to that, John?
No, I think that's about right. You know, yeah. We've got to hit that pause button. And again, I just think we really got to spend more time doing good youth ministry. And I really think that's going to be a huge difference maker for our confirmation prep programs.
Right. Definitely. Definitely. So if people want to like talk to us more about this, they can find us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook. We're all over the place except for Snapchat. Yeah, are you on Snapchat?
There. No, yeah, you know, I downloaded the app once. I tried to play around with it. Our mutual friend, Michael, has suggested that I should get on it. And I tried it and I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. So yeah. No, I'm on Snapchat.
Yeah, I have never been more confused by anything in the world, but that's a conversation for another time. But you can find us on all those other social media outlets. You can find John at johnrinaldo.com, and you can find me at marathonyouthministry.com. You can reach out to us with questions at questions@thechurchpodcast.org, or go to our website, thechurchpodcast.org. And of course, you can find us on iTunes. In fact, leave us a review. Tell us how we're doing. Share with us. That's the best way to get the word out, because we want to help the church do ministry better. So go to iTunes, leave that review, and let us know how we're doing. But we hope you're doing well. We're so grateful that you could join us. Thank you for listening and being a part of this. We're proud of you. We love you. We'll catch you.